Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to the first part of a two-part show featuring the life and times of 77-year-old Tony Rice. Born in England in 1929, Tony's story starts from his memories as a 13-year-old during World War II. Not just happy to be a passive watcher, he chooses to pick up and collect unexploded incendiary bombs and pull them apart. This innate curiosity and desire for adventure grows as the years go on. With adventures such as trying to explode a German grenade and collecting teeth from an explosion in a graveyard, Tony eventually decides to join the Merchant Navy as a deck boy and survives two sinkings. At the end of the war, he's drafted into the Navy and relates some of his adventures on HMS Victorious, an aircraft carrier. Tales that include being thrown into the brig for 16 days for talking to Princess Margaret, and spending another 5 days in the dungeons under Gibraltar Rock for being absent without leave. All of which, Tony says, was worth it. Here, with his story, is Tony. Well, Tony, can we start by asking you when you were born and where you were born?
Well, I was born in a little place called Shirehampton, between Bristol and Avonmouth in England.
Okay, what's your earliest memories?
My earliest memories is during the war, like the German planes used to come down along the port way, bombing down along there and up the River Severn.
Right.
When I become 14, we moved from Shirehampton down to a little country town called Ost. My father bought a farm there, about a 7-acre farm, a little poultry farm. And I got a job on the ferry going from England over to Wales, from Ost to Beechley.
Before we go a little bit further with that, Tony, do you mind if I just take you back a bit earlier, though? Because we're talking about what life was like at 14. There's a lot of years before that for a young boy growing up.
Well,
what can you recall?
I was a bit of an outlaw and things like that.
What do you mean?
Well, say, during the war, I was only about, around about 13, 14 then. And when the Germans used to come up bombing along the River Severn, bombing up at, I forget the name of the place now, at the end of the River Severn, they used to drop their bomb loads along the river banks when the English planes come, you know, shooting at them. I used to go down and pick up a lot of the incendiary bombs.
Wow.
I'd take them home, unbeknownst to Dad and Mum.
I bet.
And I'd take them apart.
Gosh.
No worries, look, I didn't worry.
No.
And so one day, we had an army camp right next door to us. And one day the sergeant come around, he found out somehow that I'd been picking up these bombs and that.
Right.
He said, I'd like to have a look at them. So I took him out to have a look, and here's all the detonators lined up, and the other parts of the bombs were lined up. And he said, I'm going to have to take these off you, Tony.
Yeah.
I said, oh, no. He said, yes, I'm sorry. So he took them over to the camp, and like a fool, they told me later on, he started filing one of the detonators out of the bombs.
Right.
And it blew up in his hand.
Gosh.
And he lost most of his fingers and that.
But that could have been you, couldn't it?
That could have been me, you.
Yes, that's right.
But it didn't worry me.
No. What, did Dad say anything to you when he found out about this?
Well, Dad didn't find out until later.
Ah, right. It must have been a bit of an adventure for a boy, all of this, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, really. When I was working on the ferry, I found two bodies. Washed up on the riverbank, one just down from the jetty where the ship used to come in the ferry boat, and He had no arms, no legs, no head.
Gosh.
The only thing coming from his body was a sinew down to his hand. And on his hand he had a ring.
Right.
And that's the only way they could identify him by.
And you saw the body?
I saw the body and reported it.
Right. What did it have an effect on you, or did you, was it just a matter of fact?
Well, no, it didn't worry me, really.
Right. Was that the first time you'd seen a dead person?
Yeah.
Gee, you dealt with that really well.
Yeah. Well, later on, I found another body. It was a German pilot.
Mm-hmm.
He had a revolver on his hip and a hand grenade in his belt and that. And he was washed up on the bank. So what did Tony do? He grabbed the revolver and the hand grenade, took the revolver home. The hand grenade, I was throwing it against the cliff, tore to set it off. But the German hand grenades then were what they call a stick hand grenade. They had a detonator in the end, though I didn't know that, so I was pretty safe.
Gee whiz. In some ways, you're really lucky to be here today with all of these adventures.
Yeah. Oh, I've had a lot of funny experiences, isn't it?
Mm. Tell me a little bit about Mum. How did Mum deal with all this in the war? Was it difficult?
Mum never used to interfere with me or anything like that. She used to let me go my way. That's my mother up the top there.
Oh, okay.
And that's my younger sister. They both died with cancer.
Oh, that was sad.
Mm.
Were you the only child? Oh, no, you had a sister. You said that.
Yeah, my sister. And I got another sister here in Healesville.
Right. Were your sisters older than you or younger?
That one was younger than me. And the one in Healesville here is older than me.
Right. So did you have any mates to play with when this was all going on?
Oh, yeah, plenty of young mates and that. Yeah, we used to go out in the fields and climb the trees and all that sort of a thing.
Right.
But there was another thing in Ost, when we were down at Ost, on the farm. The name of the farm was Poole's Farm. Now they tell me they got the Severn Bridge coming from Wales over to England, over to Ost, and it's taken up our farm. So I used to go down to the graveyard. I used to wander around there a lot. The Germans, when they bombed along the river, there was a bomb that come straight down from the straight down the church, and blew just the steeple part out. And what did Tony do? He goes in, he looks around the graves, and comes out with a few teeth with gold in them.
Oh, you were a character as a boy.
I was, I'll tell you.
Did you go to school during the war?
Oh, yes, I went to school all right, yeah.
What was that like? Did you enjoy it?
Well, I never really enjoyed it, but right. I went to school. I didn't, shirk school or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But coming down from our farm, going down to the village, there was a big mansion that was owned by the policeman, and on the other side of that was the church graveyard. And it had a wall, I'll say about 6 foot high,
yeah.
Down to the road. And my sisters and that, I was always teasing them. And they used to come down the road, like at night, down to the village. Tony used to get in the graveyard and when they come down, he'd have a tin with a few stones in it, and he'd throw them out on the out on the road, and fried them. that was my experiences down in the village. And later on, we moved into Bristol.
Yeah.
And I decided I wanted to join the Navy, or Merchant Navy. My grandfather, he was in the old Windjammers, and my father, he was in the Navy in the First World War. He died down on the farm. We found him dead one morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. When we got to Bristol, I made a few friends in that there, but I decided I want to go to the sea. And I went down, I was only 15, or 15 and a half, and decided to join the Merchant Navy ships.
Right.
So I joined one ship, a tanker.
Would they take you at that age legally?
They didn't worry at that age.
They didn't? Right.
You could join up as a cabin boy or a deck boy.
Okay.
I used to go as a deck boy. I lost two ships from underneath me during the war. This was in the later part of the war.
Was that a scary experience? Was that a scary experience?
It was. The tankers, we were heading for Russia. And it was up off Iceland where we got hit by German bombs. And quite a few of the blokes there, you'll see a few tears here. Quite a few of the blokes were lost.
Yeah.
And well, as soon as the ship went down, the shipping company, the British Tanker Company, they cut out your pay.
Oh.
So I went back home and joined up in another ship. And it was going to the Mediterranean, another tanker. I used to stick with the tankers.
Yes.
We got halfway through the Mediterranean. And we got hit again. We lost quite a few men then.
Yes. Well, I mean, this it's a most saddening thing, and I guess war touched everybody in that way, either direct family or
that's
people,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
But I never got to Malta then, just after that the war ended.
Right.
And they drafted me into the Navy. And they put me on the first, they put me into training. We went into training in a land-operated training school. And we were in there 7 weeks. And then they transferred us down to Plymouth, or Devonport, Plymouth.
Yeah.
And I was transferred onto a tank, not a tanker, a aircraft carrier, HMS Victorious.
That would have been a damn sight larger ship than a tanker.
Yes, it was badly damaged during the war. Her decks were like wings.
Wow.
Where the bombs and that hit. And we had to take her up to Rosyth to for repairs. So we took off and going through the Irish Sea, we hit one of the worst storms ever. And the front part of the ship was all caved in. The aircraft lifts, they go up and down to take the aircraft down below. They were all washed down, like with the waves. And we were in 3 foot of water all the way up to Rosyth.
Did you fear for your safety in that situation?
Oh,
did
yeah.
Did you think there was a good chance of going down again?
Yeah. And there wasn't much we could do. We had to keep going. And we got to Rosyth, and there was that much damage to the ship, to the carrier, that they had to, you know, scrap her.
How sad for the car. That would have been very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were transferred then back down to Plymouth. And they transferred me onto HMS Vanguard, one of the biggest British battleships. And at that time, it was a Royal Yacht.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they cancelled it. And in 1952, I think, the Royal Yacht, the actual Royal Yacht was built then.
Britannica.
That's when the King died.
What was your, now, you were a sailor, were you an able seaman, was that?
I started off as a deck boy.
Mm-hmm.
And up to ordinary seaman.
Ordinary seaman.
And then able seaman.
And what was your duties? What sort of work did you do on like, when you were in the Navy?
On the aircraft carrier, well, I was actually an aircraft handler.
Oh, okay.
That was my job. But on the way up, well, nobody could work on the way up, you know.
No, not in that.
Through the rough ice.
Yes.
and you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, featuring the life and times of older Australians.
But on HMS Vanguard, I was made a telephone operator.
Okay.
And there was only three of us had the actual phone call through to the Royal Palace.
Right.
And while I was on her, the radio telephone come in, and I was one of the first to use it.
Right. What difference did that make to life on a large ship out at sea, having a radio telephone? Did that make any difference?
Yes, you could call ship to shore easy.
Right.
Whereas before, like, you only had the ordinary telephone. The ship-to-shore phone, it was one of the best things that ever come in.
Okay.
If you were in danger out at sea or anything like that, you could always contact, like, the coast or wherever you were.
All right.
We were on the Mediterranean fleet. We went, the royal family were aboard. They come aboard for a while. And one day, me and about three of the boys, we were down in our mess deck having a smoke. And Princess Margaret wandered down and having a yak with us. We were having a good old talk, and the shore patrol come down and picked the four of us up and put us in the cells.
For talking to the princess?
Yeah.
But wouldn't you have gotten into as much trouble if you'd just walked off and left her there? I mean...
Well, I don't know about that, but we got the blame for talking to her.
Had you been warned beforehand not to talk to members of the royal family?
No, never.
Oh, gee, that was a bit rough.
She just wandered down to the mess deck. She was one of the best of the royal family.
I was
going
to say, what was she like to talk to? Was she easy?
Oh, easy to talk to, yes. Yeah. Better than any of the rest of the family.
So you got carted off to...
Yeah, put in the cells while you were talking to her.
And how long did you have to spend in there?
16 days.
I was about to say, it sounded as though Tony had sort of settled down, wasn't getting into any trouble when you got into the Navy, and then this happens. You just can't avoid it, can you?
Well, after that, when we were in the Mediterranean, we went over to Malta. Oh, going through, we pulled in at Gibraltar, anchored there for a few days. And me and a couple of the boys went ashore, and we got ourselves a girlfriend, like, mm-hmm. and... they got us civilian clothes, and we went across the two borders. You had the two borders going from Gibraltar over to Spain.
Of course.
And they got us through the two borders. We went over and had a look at the bullfighting in that at plus, you know. we forgot to go back. We stayed over there for 2 days. And... when we woke up, we had to get back to the ship. We went through the two borders, and outside the English border, the shore patrol was waiting for us.
Oh, dear.
So they carried us off to the dungeons in, underneath the rock.
Wow.
We were there for 5 days, and they transferred us back to the ship. And we done another 16 days there.
I was going to say it, but the captain wasn't pleased. Gee whiz. Was it worth it? Was it worth it?
It was worth it, yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And then we went back to England, and I was 6 months over my discharge. I was only on conscription.
Oh, okay.
And I was 6 months over my discharge.
Yeah.
I was going through from the able seaman's rate. And front of the commander, and he said, Able Seaman Royce, he said, you've passed your Able Seaman's rate. He said, but then what do you think of the Navy? I said, well, sir, I said, I hate the Navy. I said, and I hate the ship.
Wow.
Oh, he said, like that, eh? Right, Stan. Next day I was off the ship,
yes.
In the barracks, and out to civilian life.
Right.
And then I rejoined the Merchant Navy again.
So it wasn't being at sea that you didn't like. You didn't like the actual Navy itself, is that it? I mean, you've just joined up with the Merchant Navy, but you told him you hated the Navy and you hated that ship. So it wasn't the sea you hated, it was...
No, it was just the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was all spit and polish, you know.
That's right.
Even though I was a telephone operator, I still had to get out on deck in the morning and, you know, scrub the decks on your hands and knees. And that's one thing I used to hate.
Not much for discipline.
No.
No.
But in the Merchant Navy, like, you more or less had a free go.
Yeah.
You didn't have anything like that. The captain had asked you to do it, and you'd do it.
Right.
But he wouldn't tell you to do it.
Yes.
Put it that way.
Yes. Did you enjoy the Merchant Navy?
Yeah.
How far did you travel with them?
Oh, well, after I got discharged from the Navy, I rejoined the Merchant Navy again.
Mm-hmm.
And I got back on the tankers, the British Tanker Company. And we had to go to Aberdeen in Aden to pick up the crude oil and that. Our first trip was from Aberdeen, we went to Sweden.
Right.
And we discharged, she was only a 16,000 ton ship. And we discharged it. And it was in the winter, right on Christmas. The people there, they put on a Christmas party for us, give us presents and everything in Sweden. Ortvigen was the name of the place we landed in. And after a couple of days, you could get out of the ship. You didn't have to go ashore by boat. You could just walk across the ice.
Oh, wow, okay.
Just like that. And... we left there 2 days after. We got a report that the fuel we left in the tanks all exploded. Like from the cold and that, the temperatures.
Wow.
So we couldn't do nothing about it, so we kept going and back to, not Aberdeen this time, Bandam Ashur, that's another port in Iran, like another oil field. Went there, picked up fuel, picked up aviation fuel this time, and went down to South Africa, pulled into Durban there to refuel ourselves, and then down to South America. La Plata was the place we ended up anchoring, and we were just discharging the fuel there. The police there, they were very strict. They tried to keep us on the ship instead of going ashore. But we'd sneak off at night and jump the fence and head into the nearest bar.
What was it like in those places in those years? Because it must have been a bit wild.
It was wild, yes. Well, in South America, the vigilantes, they more or less were. They were the army police.
Oh, okay.
And they were right on to you. Well, we ended up there one day in Buenos Aires. Like me and three of the other boys, we just took a ride into Buenos Aires, and that was, I think it was about 15 miles away from the wharf. And we went into one of the cantinas there and watching the Spanish girls dancing it and having a drink. And they always used to put these bowls of peanuts on the table. Mm-hmm. So these blokes in uniform, we didn't know what sort of uniform they were. They come up, they started picking at our peanuts. And we told them to POQ. And what did they do? They arrested us.
They were just waiting, weren't they? They were just waiting for you to say something, yeah.
And they put us in jail overnight. And when they let us out the next morning, we had no wallet, no nothing. All we left the jail in was our underpants.
They took everything?
They took everything, yeah, everything.
Gee.
And we headed back to the ship, and a couple of days after that, we left down there and went back over to England, discharged, and I was ashore for about 10 days, like 10 days leave. Then went back to get again to another ship. I shipped out of Avonmouth. And we went, this time it was Fairhill, was the place we went to next time in Iran. And from there we went over to South America. But we weren't there long, we just discharged and ate. And then I went back home and I joined another ship, the Avismere. She was the aviation shipping company, just a cargo boat. And she was coming to Australia with prefabricated schools and cars.
Okay, what year was this roughly?
When we come over here, that was in mid-late 49.
Okay.
1949.
All right, yeah. So Australia's still struggling for materials and cars and things, yes, yes.
Well, we come over and we dump the schools and the cars in Sydney.
Do join Tony and myself next week for the final part of his story, where Tony tells of arriving in Australia and jumping ship, eventually gaining papers to stay, and it's here that his adventures really take off. He heads for the Northern Territory. He hunts crocodiles, rounds up and breaks brumbies, all without any previous riding experience, is made a totem cousin by the local Warramunja tribe, a rare honour indeed. Oh, and there's more, much more. So do tune in and find out. Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.